Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, thank you for tuning into the World Boxing Review Radio Show. My name is Aaron Snowell. They call me the Hall of Fame Trainer of Champions. And we travel the world for past, present, and future stars. And coming to you live from the Fighter's Heaven in Deer Lake, Pennsylvania, Orangeburg, with our radio aficionado. And we got a host of guests, Bob Murray, as he takes us around the world, in and out, dipping down. And we're on the mountaintop of formerly Muhammad Ali's camp at the plateau of the Fighter's Heaven in Deer Lake. And also we have here in Deer Lake the one, the only, the absolute, never gets no better than the president of the Indiana Boxing Hall of Fame. What time is it? Craig Hawkshorn. Welcome to the show, fellas.
Hello, hello. Yes, it's good. Beautiful day here in Pennsylvania. Wow, man, we're just having some wonderful summertime weather. And, yeah, we're excited. We're going to have a lot of things happening over the next hour or so. And, yeah, we're going to take a little short trip around the world today, Aaron, because we have so much fun going on here. So we're not going to worry about doing too much. But, man, we got some things to talk about.
Well, and, we're talking about the greatest and the latest, Bob.
Yeah.
And we can talk from here.
Yeah, we're sorry for the feedback here, but we're going live. There's a lot of stuff going on in boxing, and it's sure enough going on here today. But Bob, before we let you get around the world and on that magic carpet ride, we're going to bring the one and only, because he's going to announce something special on our show, and I thank him so dearly. Come way from Indiana, up in our backyard, up here at the Fighter's Heaven, formerly known as Muhammad Ali's training camp, to see it, to witness it. This is his first time here. And Craig is a part of greatness. He likes greatness, so he had to come to the greatest of all times, Muhammad Ali. Welcome into the World Boxing Review Radio Show.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here today, Craig Hawk, Indiana Boxing Hall of Fame president. I'm enjoying it so far. Ali's been one of my idols. I think he motivated millions of fighters around the world. It's been a great day to be with you and Bob today and just start talking boxing, because that's what we're about. We're talking about greatness. We're talking about the greatest all time. 56-5, 37 knockouts, first three-time light heavyweight champion of the world, Muhammad Ali, the greatest of all time. I mean, what he did for his people, what he did for so many people, how many inspired him. He's number one. There's just no question about it.
Ain't no question, Bob. Mm-hmm. When you're talking about the greatest of all times, you know, you hear Money Mayweather say that he's the greatest. You know, look, in all the nooks and crannies on the planet, when you hear people talk about Muhammad Ali, they say he's the greatest of all time. And not only just inside the ring, but outside the ring. He had the character and the personality in the ring and out of the ring that people wanted to see. And if they didn't like him, some hated him. But one thing they had to do was respect him. And he demanded that respect of what you need to be the greatest. And other fighters recognized that Muhammad Ali was the greatest of all times. So, Bob, look, you know, up here at the Fighter's Haven today, it's just so beautiful up here on the mountaintop, man. The sun is glistening, but the cool of the shade and this nice tent that Mike Madden and Mick, they put up. And we want to thank Mike Madden and Mick and his team and his group for allowing us to come up here, number one, just to be a part of the event. Number two, to allow us to do our radio show up here live, man. We're live. We're Craig Hawk. You
live stuff, man.
This is live stuff. You realize that
it's possible. It's possible to live your dream, man. It's possible to do positive things in this world, and you can make a difference.
Well, I'm going to tell you what Muhammad Ali told me right up here on this mountaintop, right over here in the gym. in that cabin in this house. He told me you can be whatever you want to be as long as you believe in God, because God makes it all possible. Through this journey of having my start up here at the Muhammad, because, man, when you know, a lot of times people ask and say, man, you're a trainer, you know, I heard a lot about you, but a lot of people really don't know how I got started. So once they start hearing how I got involved and started in the boxing, it's like, this can be true.
it is true.
It's hard to fathom. You know, Muhammad Ali in our backyard, we met him, them sites that you seen early there.
Absolutely.
I mean, you went to the original site where Bernie Pollock, Mink Farm, where Gene Kilroy, and then where they took him and had him see those that Mink Farm and the original, you know, Deer Lake. And then Bernie Pollock sold Muhammad Ali this parcel of land. And then, you know, they start to build. They build the gym first. Then they built different cabins. And as you look up there in the hill, when I was young, about 79, when Tim Witherspoon started coming around, they were bunkhouses.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, military-style beds. You had a lot of the amateur fighters. When Tim Witherspoon first came up here with Saab Muhammad, where Muhammad Ali let him use this training camp, you know, to train. Them guys stayed there along. I stayed up in there. And Tim Witherspoon only had maybe three professional fights. No, none. Had three amateur fights.
Correct.
Three amateur fights at the time. And then the rest was long signed and distinguished. And that's where I met Tim up here at the training camp. Now, I met Saab Muhammad when he came up. He was up here by himself.
Oh, wow.
And me and Saab, I just hooked up with Saab. We talked, bang. It was a natural occasion. You know, Saab liked to train hard, run, and, you know, all that was right up our alley, you know. So Alana Shabazz was one of Ali's chefs, close to my family, my sister Gail and them. They became real close. And, you know, our humblest beginning from sweeping in the gym, picking up paper from people that were here. Man, all of this used to be.
What about the dishwashing days?
Yeah, well, the dishwashing days, like I had to do scrub them dishes,
yeah.
Man, bust them suds, like Houdini's.
Yeah. I was the busboy in Greensburg, you know what I'm saying? I'm the busboy. Tables in their humble beginnings, but that's where it starts, and that's what, you know, the journey leads you to greatness, and that's what we were on the journey to do.
Yeah, dreams will only come true that if you believe that they do. You have to dream a little while. And you have to work hard to make it happen. And you can't be afraid to get your hand dirty and take the crap man's job.
Yeah.
Like, you know, a plumber, right?
Yeah.
At one time or another, you know, if you're the plumber, it's going to get crappy.
Yeah.
It's going to get shit.
Literally.
Yeah, literally. So when you're the low guy on the totem pole, you know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You're going to have to take a lot of crap, a lot of dirt. But, you know, Ali was the type of guy is that he lifted everybody up to him. So when I was young, as you see them young videos, when he put us in those videos, you know, it was all about greatness.
Yeah, and here's another thing that Ali did that I think maybe some of the people that are fans of boxing appreciate it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like some of these guys, you can't even get around them. You know, they don't even want to take a picture with you or anything.
Right.
You know, some of the boxing fans, and I'm not going to say whose names they are, okay? I'm not saying that. But Ali would take a picture with you anywhere, almost like Don King. He'd get a picture with you anywhere. These guys, they'll come up there, they'll shake your hand, they'll do whatever it takes because they're about the people. They literally brought it right to you. You know what I'm saying? And I don't know if Mayweather will do that or not. I don't know if he'll do that or not. But here's one thing that Muhammad Ali did. Is he came to you. He came to South Bend, Indiana.
Right, okay, yeah.
He came to Harold Brazier's fight. He got a picture, and he signed as many autographs, and, you know, he didn't ask for a dime. everything that he did. We had the Indiana Black Expo in Indianapolis, Indiana. And here comes Muhammad Ali promote that Floyd Mayweather Jr. fights on his show. All this great stuff that happened in Indiana. That's why Ali's one of the greatest of all time. You take it everywhere, baby.
Yeah, the first time I really met Ali was I was a young kid still in school. You know, just grade school. I guess maybe high school then. My mom was a nurse at the local hospital. And I don't know which daughter it was. It wasn't Layla. It was one of his other daughters was getting a tonsillectomy.
It might have been Miriam.
I think it was Miriam, maybe. Yeah, and my mom calls me up, and she says, I just lived over the other hill, you know, as possible. And she says, get over here, Mom, I'll leave, put it on a shelf. And that's exactly what happened. We go up there, and I ride my bicycle over. And Ali's there, oh, it was so great, you know. Got the autograph and all that stuff. And I was a little kid. It was beautiful.
You know what it means to the people.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Well, look, somebody just joined us. That's a very important part of this whole thing, the fighters having up on top of the mountain. Mick Stefanik, he's a gentleman and a scholar. You know, he's Mike Madden's right-hand man. The apple never falls short of the tree. When you talk to Mike, it's like when you talk to Mick, it's like talking to Mike. And it's like in boxing, the 1-2 punch. And the 1-2 punch is the hardest thing to get around, to get away from. And when you see Mick, you see Mike, and it's like the 1-2 punch in boxing. But he is the general manager of the Fighters Haven. And first of all, personally, for allow us to come up to this fine establishment that you have redesigned in terms of its newness, its uniqueness, its brightness. Up here in the mountain today, it's glooming and glistering with the spirits of Muhammad Ali. I mean, this camp is second to none and has a lot to do with you, Mick. And we'd like to welcome you into the World Boxing Review Radio Show.
Well, thanks, Aaron. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me here. And, you know, first off, it's good to be speaking here to you. We got the ground set up for a nice gathering of the USA Boxing alumni. And they're going to have a reunion here this afternoon, and it's going to start at 3 and go from question mark. We can get the fireplace going here. And, yeah, the camp has turned out really nice, Aaron. It's a labor of love for Mike Madden. He invested time, effort, and money, and he'd be the first to tell you. He has the ways and means to do this, and this is something that he wanted to do. And our mission statement is to through the restoration and renovations, to honor the life and legacy of Muhammad Ali and to remind some like us and to educate others, our youth, about that life and legacy of Muhammad Ali. And we do a lot with school groups here. And we're just happy that the word's getting out, and this is another avenue that we can get the word out. But it's really a cool place, so if anybody has a chance to get up here, we're open year-round by appointment. Our hours or our time frame or our schedule from May through October is we're open on weekends from 10 to 5 on Saturdays and Sundays, and then by appointment Monday through Friday, and the foot traffic has really been picking up. Our weekends have been getting a little bit more crowded, and we're really getting a lot coming up during the week through scheduling an appointment. Looking around the grounds here, we got some people setting up, and I hope anyone who's listening can get up here at some time. And you can get us on our website at www.fightersheaven.com. Our Instagram is fightersheaven.heaven. And you can give us an email, info@fightersheaven.com, or our phone number is 570-968-2961. So thanks again, guys, for having me here, and really appreciate you giving us some hype and some recognition about what's going on here.
Well, look, Mick, y'all have restored this in its original form. And, you know, I got my start on top of the mountain here, as you well know, in boxing. And to be here to see how y'all restored it, and again, thank you for allowing us to stay in the cabins with Craig and myself. I mean, just absolutely beautiful. It gives me goosebumps to be here because I feel like Ali's here. It's the original form. The atmosphere is like that. Mick, you're always so outgoing, friendly to everyone that comes up here. You're always saying, come on, be a part, taking pitches. You know, you have become, when it comes to this training camp and Muhammad Ali, in your own right, on a historian to be able to go back in time to tell different stories and things like that. And even with this training camp, different people and things that you have met along the way. Now, this place used to be wall-to-wall with fans when Muhammad Ali was up here. And Muhammad Ali was the type of person is that he tried to touch everybody. And I all the time say, if you don't have a Muhammad Ali story and you met Muhammad Ali, then you didn't really meet Muhammad Ali. So he always left something everlasting on your mind when he was around. And people would take it personally because that's the way Ali would, it would be a personable experience. He would hug people. He would pick people, babies up, kids, shallow by, act like he's fighting kids, hug them, kiss them, tell them to sit down, give them food. And most of all, to see Muhammad Ali when he was on the top of his game, heavyweight champion of the world, his charity work that he did for people. People used to come from all over the world. And to see him sit down in the gym with his checkbook open and people would come up to the table and tell him sad stories without doubt, without question, just start writing checks to him and hand them out. Money. And, you know, people would say, Muhammad, why are you giving your money away like that? You know, you can't give everybody. He said, this is the kindness of the people that we do, our rent that we're paying. And one day in heaven, he would get the blessing. And he's in heaven now and us sitting here talking about his great charity work. It is a form of charity in itself, but it in Islam, it says it lifts them up into the highest level to promote his goodwill. And Muhammad Ali did promote his goodwill up here on top of the mountain, second to none. I mean, from Michael Jackson. When Michael Jackson, I remember he when Michael Jackson came up here, he called the house and told us to come down. So we met Michael Jackson. Michael Jackson came to Pottsville and was in my house.
Right.
You know what I mean? And his brothers and all this. Michael Jackson stayed in the cabins here. You know, he was here for a time. And to see the interaction with a great entertainer like Michael Jackson, to see the height that Michael Jackson with the Jackson 5, as it was called, his brothers, Randy, Tito, and all of them, and his father, Joe Jackson, all of them were here. So to see how the inner exchange between a Muhammad Ali and a young, talented man, known but not yet great, and how that interaction happened, and to see Michael Jackson take off and reach that high plight was second to none. Ali influenced a lot of people.
Millions.
Yep. And let me tell you, when you talk about this camp, the fine boxers that came through, a young Michael Doakes, when Michael Jackson was here, Michael Doakes was here. Michael Doakes went on. He was a good amateur, but he became heavyweight champion. You know, Tony Tubbs.
TNT Tubbs.
Tony TNT Tubbs with the Muhammad Ali Professional and Amateur Sports with was here. Tony was an amateur. He went on to become heavyweight champion. Tony Tucker. Tony Tucker was a good amateur, light heavyweight at the time when he was on the Muhammad Ali amateur team, but he became heavyweight champion. So, and with the Muhammad Ali Professional and Amateur Sports, you know, the first champion they got was a Olympian. You remember, Craig, Leo Randolph?
Leo Randolph was from Tacoma, Washington.
Yes, he was.
He was. Him and Ray Seals and all that whole group out of there.
Phenomenal.
Not only was he a gold medal winner, he was a world champion.
And that's not easy to do because it's not easy to transcend your game as an amateur and make it to the highest level as a pro. Sometimes it's not done. So, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and that was his first champion with professional Muhammad Ali in professional sports with Harold Smith. Leo Randolph was the first champion that he had. But you had, remember Charles Carter? He was a top
edge. Joe Cloud.
You remember Joe Cloud? Joe Cloud was he was a trainer. He was here. He trained here with the Muhammad Ali team. And do you remember Chuck Bodak?
Yeah, he used to wear some funny stuff on his forehead sometimes.
Yeah, across his head he used to do stuff like that.
De La Hoya.
He was there here trained. But the list is so fine but distinguished. Now, earlier, you know, when I was a kid, when Larry Holmes was up here, when Larry Holmes in 1974, when Larry Holmes was here, Larry Holmes only had 9 professional fights in 1974. And before Muhammad Ali went to Zaire, they did in Pottsville, our hometown, Bob, that exhibition at Marks Hall.
Right.
That exhibition at Marks Hall was my middle school.
Okay.
So my sister and all of us was here, and Ali was talking to us about he wanted to do something. And he didn't know what, so he asked my sister Rosie, did the school have uniforms, marching uniforms? My sister Rosie said no, they didn't have uniforms and that they needed them. So after she said that, Ali went and found a way with people around to make that come true. So the exhibition that he did at Mark's Hall was to raise money for the band. Another form of charity.
Wow, nice.
And he was getting ready for the fight for Zaire. Now, we were sitting right there by that rock up there. And Ali, he was like down. And Ali, the least little thing would spark him. Because, you know, and when you're training, sometimes it gets rough. And he was hearing conversations that some in his own camp didn't expect him to win.
Oh, yeah.
That he was going to George Foreman.
George Foreman.
And this is before he did the exhibition in Pottsville. So he came over to us. He said, do you think I can beat George Foreman? And we're like looking at Ali. We're like, yeah, you're Muhammad Ali. You can do anything. He said, you really think so? We said, yeah, man, you the champ. You Ali, you can do anything. And he took that, and he ran with it. And when he came up to the school, you ever see that video that I showed some people about me and Ali rapping back and forth? And I'm saying, yeah. That video is before the George Foreman fight, and he was standing outside the door of the house, and he goes, they don't have no other choice but to buy me a Rolls Royce. I'm the greatest of all time. They have no other choice. And he said about how he was going to knock him out.
Well, yeah. It also helped when half of the Zaire kept saying, Ali Boumaye. Ali Boumaye.
Yeah.
And how can you all this enthusiasm? And then he had the right game plan. If you listen to his video, he said, I'm not the hardest puncher. I'm not the hardest hit. But this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to box. I'm going to smooth. And he talked how he was going to beat George Foreman. And absolutely what he said.
It came to pass.
It came to that. He let George Foreman punch himself out.
Yeah.
He said, he's used with knocking out the guy within two or three rounds. I'm going to take him to the deep water and ground him. And that's what he did.
But there was cancellations, too.
Oh, yeah.
With
the cut.
Okay. The cancellations happened. Things, he was traveling this place, that place, that were demanding to promote the fight. And what happened, right, it was supposed to be in July. I got the flyers and all that, July and all that. Mm-hmm. And it ended up being later before he went to Zaire. And them videos with Larry Holmes – sparring Muhammad Ali in Deer Lake, not Deer Lake, in Mark's Hall, is Larry only has 9 professional fights. Isn't that something?
That's crazy. I mean, some of this, you know, there's another one, Larry Holmes and Tim Witherspoon. You don't have to have a lot of amateur fights.
No.
And that's what a lot of people don't understand.
It's about who the teacher is.
Yeah.
And their skill level.
I try to explain that to a lot of people. They spend so much time trying to do
try to teach a guy everything.
Yeah,
you can't teach him everything.
Yeah,
you just got to teach him how to fight.
Yeah. And then they spend so much time trying to chase this gold medal like it's going to make them huge money. And then what happens is, for example, like a Kelsey Banks has too many amateur fights, or somebody at that level that has too many amateur fights. The time they get pro, they've already spent their best days as an amateur.
Yeah,
and start going more rounds instead of just 3 rounds. Now we're really taking it to deep water, and that happens. You know, it's boxing. But, you know, when you're around the greatest, Muhammad Ali with Tim Witherspoon, Larry Holmes, it's bound to rub off on you. You know exactly what he's done. He inspired these people, and the belief system that he put in you, those gentlemen, those men, they knew what greatness was.
Absolutely. Well, Bob, look, man, we're sorry, you know, the introduction, everybody got carried away. We got to get back into, we got to take this trip around the world, Greg, but don't leave. You ain't going nowhere.
No,
nowhere.
Sure. I said we don't have a lot.
So what we're gonna do? Bob's gonna take us around the world. This magic carpet ride, Bob, in live and living color. Greg, you're gonna see how Bob takes this carpet ride, and he can go.
Okay, so yeah, here we are, Deer Lake, PA, and we're gonna get back here quick. Like I said, there are lots of fights going on, but what we're going to only focus on a couple of the big ones. ESPN Plus. Is going to have co-main events tonight. They'll feature super featherweights Gabriel Flores, 21-1, 7 KOs, taking on the unbeaten Giovanni Cabrera, who's 20-0 with 7 knockouts. We also have Joe Gonzalez. This is a big one, 25-2 with 15 KOs. He's taking on Isaac Dogbo, 23-2, 15 KOs. And Gonzalez's belts are on the line. He's a WBO International Featherweight Champion, and Dogbo is looking to take that away from him. And that's all happening in Hinckley, Minnesota, USA. That's out by your end of the sticks there, isn't it, Craig?
Well,
Minnesota, sort of.
We gotta go.
Hey, how about Murfreesboro, Tennessee? They also have a fight tonight. Jarrell Miller, he's going to be he fought about a month ago, too, his first time back after his suspension. He's 24-0-1, 20 KOs. He's taking on 8-9 Derek Cardenas in the heavyweight meeting there. And also, Tyson Sports TV will be down in San Lorenzo, Argentina, with Evelyn Bermudez. She's 16-0-1, 6 knockouts. She's defending her IBF and WBO World Female Lightweight Crowns in a showdown with Yerineth Altuve, who's 13-3 and 11 KOs. So that's our trip around the world. We didn't go too far, 3 countries. But we're going to be, because we're having too much fun here. Also, we want to mention one other news that came out this week. The Haney and Kambosos rematch, they've settled on a date for that now. It's going to be October 16th in Melbourne, Australia. So there we go. We're all ready to go. We got a trip around the world. That was a quick one.
I think I never
knew he had so much boxing knowledge in him, buddy. Are you giving that hand that paper, man? And he's on it, dude. He's on it. The way he got out of his book. That guy, he can read that book better than I can. But, you know, mine comes straight from the heart. But I'm going to tell you right now. He's got some game. He's got some boxing knowledge.
Hey,
around the world like that, we get the world boxing news with Aaron Snowell, Hall of Fame trainer. One thing I want to announce right now is Aaron Snowell comes into the Indiana Boxing Hall of Fame class of 2023. He was there, and he had worked at Richard Hall's corner when he fought the great Roy Jones Jr. I believe it was at the Conseco Fieldhouse there in Indianapolis, Indiana. And all greatness, all great fighters, all great people, all great anything that's involved in boxing, that's what Indiana Boxing Hall of Fame is all about. And that's why I'm honored to have Aaron Snowell come in the Indiana Boxing Hall of Fame class of 2023.
Let me tell you, Craig, it's an indeed pleasure to accept this induction. Indiana's a great state. And let me tell you something, Craig. Indiana had a vice president just recently with Donald Trump, right?
Yes.
Donald Trump gave me a Lifetime Achievement Award and an award, 5 Beacon Stars. So the vice president of Indiana, former governor, he was part of that cabinet. So it all goes together in Indiana. And I want to thank each and every one of you and yourself. You know, anytime you have people that rise to those type of levels, and Craig, you understand it as president of an organization like yours and a former fighter yourself. Most fights in Indiana history, you should be going in there.
Well, there's a chance I'm going in this year, Aaron, but, you know, I'm staving. It's like the shoe shuffle that I always
get a little spit kind of.
Yeah, they weren't ready for it. And the anchor shot, the anchor punch that he landed on Sonny Liston, they still say it was a dive about it. But if you watch the fight, he hits him square on the chin, and then that's what happened when he just, look, every punch affects people different, especially when you're not ready for it. He threw the anchor punch, and he landed it on Sonny Liston, the rematch in Lewiston, Maine. And I fought there against Joey Gamache. And, you know, I remember it as well as today. But we are honored to have you come in. We're doing great things in Indiana. Again, you see me. It's not a competition. I'm at the Atlantic City Boxing Hall of Fame. I'm at the Nevada Boxing Hall of Fame. I'm at the Pennsylvania Boxing Hall of Fame. I'm at the National Boxing Hall of Fame. I'm at the West Coast Boxing Hall of Fame. Pennsylvania Boxing Hall of Fame. I'll go to them all and support them all because at the end of the day, we're all family.
We're all family. It's called the Boxing Family on Sunday.
Yeah.
Right down the road here in Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, at the Rivers Casino, the Pennsylvania Boxing Hall of Fame.
And Michael Spinks, man. Bernardo Hopkins. Michael Moore.
And Michael Moore.
Freddie Pendleton.
Yeah.
I mean, some of these guys are off the chain.
And Zaire Rahim.
Yes. Great fighters.
Great fighters, and the list is long, fine, but distinguished I would even
say maybe would you consider Marvin Johnson?
Oh, man, Marvin Johnson always fights in Philadelphia.
Yeah, go by the list, man. I think he should be eligible. But, hey, Russell Peltz, one of the greatest promoters to ever live.
He just went in. Indiana,
yes,
right?
And he just made the Indiana Boxing Hall of Fame. Great stuff because he's doing great things and he helped Indiana Boxing Hall of Fame get to a high level. And that's why Russell Peltz deserves stuff like that.
Boy, this Indiana Boxing Hall of Fame is just like that Indiana 500, man.
We're keeping it big. They tried to tell me about this, that, and the other. And I said, look, George DeFabis used to run the Golden Gloves here and he brought in people from Cincinnati, Ohio, and he brought in people from Chicago, and he brought everybody across state, and they fought in the Indiana Boxing Hall of Fame. And they don't have to be from Indiana. And I tried to tell them, all the racers, is there anybody from Indianapolis that's in there, or does everybody come there and race in the biggest race? This Indiana Boxing Hall of Fame, we're all in competition for greatness, man. And that's what it's about, Aaron, and you reached it. And so you come in the Indiana Boxing Hall of Fame next year.
Well, thank you.
Along with a guy named Larry Donald.
Larry Donald, the legend. I trained Larry, the legend Donald.
So that was one of my things, my categories was the legend / celebrity inductee. Does not have to be from Indiana. They just have to contribute to the sport of boxing. That way we can go forever. And that's what it's about.
You're going to
keep your legacy and everything going forever. David Tua, he knocked out 4 world champions. He's coming in. Gilmore, John Ruiz. I mean, these guys are killers. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
He knocks them out, you know? And they were heavyweight champions of the world.
They don't get no better than that. And, you know, the last induction that you had,
yes.
You know, it was a deed honor that we could honor a great champion like Marvin Johnson, you know,
what a great,
as an ambassador, WBC ambassador.
Yeah, and you know. Got him that belt, paid for it out of your own pocket to help because he's such a great champion. And I think what we talked about was there's Marvin who loses his title to your guy, Eddie Gregory at that time. And he has you guys go over and talk to him in the camp, and he has the class to give him his dues, to give him his credit. Like, man, you must have Must have what in those gloves?
Right.
Yeah, bricks.
Bricks.
Yeah, Marvin Johnson.
Yeah. What he said, you know, that's the great stuff. And that's the kind of man Marvin is. He's not discredited him. That's the highest level when he loses. He's crediting somebody. He's giving them their dues, and that's exactly what he deserved. Was his dues, Eddie Gregory. So we're talking greatness here again.
Yeah.
And Marvin Johnson is franchised in the Indiana Boxing Hall of Fame because of what he achieved. He's a 1972 gold medal winner, 43-6 as a pro, 35 knockouts, and a WBC and the WBA belts. They're the two biggest belts in the history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 The oldest one.
1963, and like the WBA is like 1921 or
that's
something.
That's
correct. 22. I mean, it's crazy.
100 years old.
Yeah. I mean, that's what boxing's all about, though.
It is about that.
Yeah, it's about greatness.
And going in the Indiana
Boxing
Hall of Fame
is all part of it. I'm right now posting that Muhammad Ali came to the Indiana Black Expo and put on a show, and actually Floyd Mayweather Jr. fought on the show.
Sure did.
He did. And I'm posting it right now, me and Aaron here in Deer Lake, the home of Muhammad Ali's training camp. In this history of boxing, we keep it going at the highest level.
Man, ain't no big eyes and little ewes, brother. Even the dishwasher's important. Nobody like the famous words of the great Boudini Brown. So,
I'm fast. I'm pretty, and I can't possibly be beat.
That's right. Now, you see them logs right over there?
Yes.
Ali used to, when he finished doing his road work and after taking a long run up that hill, he would come, his dressing room's right there, the door. He'd sit on them rocks. I mean, on them logs right there. And it cooled down, but people used to come. And while he was sitting there cooling down, you may see some pictures there. But right there, there was a film crew interviewing him. And he talked about that phantom punch.
Yeah.
And how Jack Johnson, he used the anchor punch. And he said it was so quick that they had to slow the film down to milliseconds.
Yeah,
to catch up with it.
Yeah, because he hit him with that the anchor punch was right out counter punch, and he kind of anchored it over the top. And if you see it, it kind of punched down, and he clips Sonny Liston on the chin, and he goes down immediately. Get up, Sonny. Get up. Yeah, I probably told him, get up. Yeah, I'm going to give you a real bubble up. And Jersey Joe Walcott didn't do a very good job refereeing. So he didn't even know about neutral corner and this and the other. He just, you know, and the count was already over. You know what I'm saying? And the fight started going. Ali's still trying to whip him and didn't have to stop it because he'd already been down 10 seconds. That's history, baby.
And don't forget, Muhammad Ali was an Olympian, too.
1960 gold medal winner.
Yes.
Yeah.
1964 heavyweight world champion, 1974 heavyweight world champion, and 1978 heavyweight world champion. The first three-time light heavyweight champion of the world.
Yeah.
You got it.
Heavyweight.
Yeah, we're talking greatness.
Heavyweight.
And you
hear
this camp?
He said, why does a man try to climb a mountain? He said, because it's there, brother.
Yeah.
It's there. That was one of his things. Now, if you look back over your left shoulder, Chris,
yeah,
you know, that's his cabin. But he had a bell. Used to be a big, long, high bell there. And when supper time, they used to ring. Or if Ali wanted the crew, he's getting ready to go there. He would ring that bell. Pull it, bring, bring. Oh, so he used to make this loud, funny sound with his tongue.
Okay.
Like, and it used to be real loud, that clocking sound. And it used to echo all up there in the mountain ridge. You could hear it real good. Man, you should see them dudes flying up out of the cabin trying to get down here to see what he wanted.
Well, you know, he's a historian. He's done a lot for boxing, and he's redefined the game. And everybody always asks me, who's the greatest? And I try to tell them, didn't matter about the record or anything. What Muhammad Ali meant to the sport, nobody was greater than what Muhammad Ali did to the sport of boxing.
I'd say like this, Greg, what Ali used to say, I'm the greatest and you're the latest.
Well, that's probably good.
Well, he used to say that he was the greatest. Now, see, the trees have grown back up over time.
Right.
But Ali had chopped down all these trees, and you used to be able to see the plateau over there, the other side of the mountain.
Right.
That was second to none, man. You could look and see it. Now, we have a video that we use with the Jack Johnson exhibit. Now, okay. If you see the Jack Johnson rock right over there, that Jack Johnson rock is on the piece, the anthracite coal. And anthracite coal in this area is the best coal in the world for its burn.
Oh, okay.
And Muhammad Ali put Jack Johnson on that fine piece of anthracite coal to make him etch in stone in the coal region.
Oh, I got you.
One of his heroes. But, you know, Ali would say when he was teaching, and that's how I learned about Jack Johnson, right here. Sometimes in the gym, sometimes right here where Ali would be preaching. But he says, man, he would tell the people in the crowd, Jack Johnson was a bad man. He didn't need no Nation of Islam. He didn't need no NAACP, right? He didn't need no Harry P. Newton. He didn't need no Elijah Muhammad, Malcolm X, or none of them. He was a bad man.
Well, I'm going to tell you something about Jack Johnson. Jack Johnson is the first black heavyweight world champion, and it's history. And I try to tell people that greatness has no color.
Either
you're great or you're not.
That's it.
Larry Bird was great.
Right. Oh, phenomenal.
Magic Johnson is great.
That's right.
And they were great as teammates when they won the Dream Team, too.
Yeah.
So it's what we always talk about. The teamwork makes the what?
Dream work.
That's what it's about, man. It's about teamwork. And it can't be about one individual.
No,
it can't. The Indiana Boxing Hall of Fame is bigger than one person. It's good, and it always will be. And that's why I try to tell people from the word go.
Yeah, well, we all the time say that, you know, what makes the World Boxing Review radio show so great, you know, Bob is a hell of a radio guy.
Yes.
Second to none. And the talent that Bob has is second to none. You haven't even seen the midst of the one-man show that Bob does. I've seen Bob go in, cut 15, 30-second commercials like that, slice it, say it, put it up in the air.
Man, he was talking on that thing. I thought it was
there. Yeah, he put it up on the air. He'd go in there, say it in the mic, cut the sound, merge what he's going to say for the commercial, 15, 30-second bites. Next thing you know, you drive down the road. Here's the commercial up on the air. Bob done did his thing that fast.
He done murdered a rock.
You met John, who's playing Jack Johnson, right?
Yeah.
So one day he kept bugging me, man, I want to get on the radio to get my talent, right? Sing his songs. So Bob used to have live bands come in and play on the radio station.
Okay.
You know? Mm-hmm. So I took John up there. He said, well, let me hear him. Let me hear him sing. Let me hear him sing. So all of a sudden, he starts singing. Bob says, okay, we're going to put him on air. Guess what happens? Bob puts him in the air, and that's how he got his soundtracks for his demo thing. He sung on the air. Bob said, let's do it right now. He did it.
Yeah, burned him a CD.
It should be
like that. You know what I'm saying? You're trying to do good, positive stuff for
him. Yeah, and I'm looking over to Rock here. You know, we see Rocky Marciano up front. You're talking about greatness.
Yes.
Rocky Marciano was a great fighter.
49-0, 43 KOs, and he never lost a fight. I think you gotta give him his credit, man. I think you gotta be. You know, you don't think it's. You can't measure how great that guy was.
No, you can't.
He could take a punch.
He could take a hell of a shot.
And
he fought some hell of a punches too. You know, Jersey did. Joe Walcott, Joe Lewis. You know,
yeah.
And the guy from Cincinnati.
Ezard Charles?
Yeah, Ezard Charles. There you go.
Yeah. We get together, we start putting the boxing together. We got the knowledge, you know what I'm saying? Like, we're historians of the game, too. Like,
right.
That's very important. Like, one thing I liked about Customata is he made sure that, for example, that Mike Tyson knew his craft. Like, he knew.
Well, you got to study the game. You know where you're going. You got to understand where you're coming from. But as you can see,
go ahead.
If you look all around here, we just got done talking about Jersey Joe Walcott. And Jersey Joe Walcott came through here before Muhammad Ali in Pottsville.
Mm-hmm.
How do I know that? I was forming the life. They wasn't going to give me because they said I was too young. In New Jersey? So Jersey Joe told me, he said, how do you throw a jab? He held his hand up. I showed him. He said, how you throw a right hand? I showed him. He said, now let me show you, see you throw a jab. Then he said, let me see you throw a left hook. So I thought, he said, well, how you stop them punches? So I showed him. He said, yeah. Go over there and move your age up 6 years. You're all right.
Yeah, 6 years, man. 15 years.
Not even that long.
Hey, you
go to college for 4 years.
Yeah.
You get a degree or a 2-year degree.
Correct.
In boxing, you'll be around the game 50 million years, and they still don't want to give you a just do. Isn't that something?
It is true. That's the way it works.
And nobody knows nothing. Everybody knows something, but nobody knows nothing.
All right.
That's true. And see, Kit Gavilan?
Mm-hmm. Gavilan.
Kit Gavilan was here.
Floyd Patterson.
Yeah, he was here. He was up
Jerry
here.
Jerry Quarry.
Jerry Quarry,
how about that one? Yeah. Archie Moore.
Yeah.
We're talking about greatness. We're talking about all time. Archie Moore had the most knockouts in boxing history.
Well, this is all of this here.
Yeah.
Is I lived it as a young man.
Okay.
So to see those names on the Rock and Ali all the time talking about them, a lot of them came here from Willie Pep.
Right.
Willie Pep.
Yeah. Could he stick and move something to none?
Yeah, they said he won a round without throwing a punch. That's one of his claims of fame.
That's
right. Let me tell you something about Willie Pep. He could box.
He
could box. And he outboxed a lot of guys out there.
Stick and move. You know, Willie Pep, you know, he turn on a dime and keep on going. He had wheels that could do all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
His feet were second to none in boxing. And Kit Gavilan spent time here. When Ali did these exhibitions up in Hazleton with St. Pat's Church, with the father, Kit Gavilan was with him. Matter of fact, Kit Gavilan was the referee in the exhibition.
Well, I got a story for you, okay?
Okay.
So me and John Hersley are going to see Mike Tyson, and we're going to get some signing autographs, right? And we're going to pay for it. I think it was $150 or whatever. We don't want to be a bunch of cheapos, bunch of freebies. We want to show respect, and we want to go see. So after the Legends Hall of Fame, I go fly out to see John Hersley, and he picks me up. And we're at John's, and we're laying down, and we're shooting in the morning, and all of a sudden Tyson messages John. He's like, come on over. So we go to Mike Tyson's hotel that's in Boston, Massachusetts. We go there, and he goes, I'm tired. I don't feel like going out. We're like, okay, we'll just get a room here, and we'll see you in the morning. No big deal. And about 12:30 Tyson gets bored and says, hey, come on up and see me. And he says to me, he goes, I'm already in bed. It's Mike Tyson. We're going to see Mike Tyson. Yeah, you know, we cater to Mike Tyson. He don't cater to us.
Yeah.
And I think he's like in room 519 or something. So we go up there, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking to Mike Tyson. And next thing you know, we're going back and forth. And he's like, you're the one that created the Indian Box Hall of Fame? I'm like, yeah. He goes, did you put Bud Taylor in? I said, Bud Taylor? Knowledge of boxing. He's bantamweight world champion. Like he started his career in like 1927. You know, that's how knowledgeable he was. And then we started talking about Marvin Johnson. I said, look, I'm going to be honest with you. I started the boxing all the thing because of Marvin Johnson. And I said, there he is again. And he goes, oh, yeah, let's put on those fights with him and Matthew Saad Muhammad. It's crazy. And that's how it works because it's a horse, again, it's his history, the historian, what he meant to the sport.
Yeah, well, he in this era,
yeah,
when you're talking about greatness,
yeah,
you know, Mike Tyson, he fits in that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The things that he did
15,
in
6,
his reign.
44 knockouts.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. His reign as heavyweight champion, he cleaned up the division
still,
and got it going to bring the money back into the game.
I still have him as the greatest knockout fighter in history, even though he doesn't probably have it percentage-wise. I believe George Foreman has it percentage-wise.
Yeah, percentage-wise.
Percentage-wise. George probably had a bigger punch. But I still think that Tyson's punch was so fast, and he got to you so quick, and his hand speed was a little bit more than George Foreman, in my opinion.
Well, he made it exciting because of his style.
Yeah.
His precious style and that speed that he had. His squirm on a guy, second to none. His instinct for the kill was second to none. It's something that you can't teach
those guys. He was
Have that kind of instinct. Once he's seen you, we're going to jiggle like gelatin. Forget about it. Turn out the lights. The party's over.
Yeah, and he was dedicated. I mean, the guy trained.
He trained.
Ollie trained. I mean, the work ethic was off the chain, and I think that's the difference with a lot of them nowadays. You know, like me and Aaron was talking about. We talk about a training camp, and they go, well, let's go to Vegas. It's a big party. You know what I'm saying? It's not.
Yeah, right.
No, it's not. Marvin Hagler, he went in excluded areas where he could train.
Yeah.
That's all he's focused on.
Craig, would you say that this is excluded area?
Absolutely. This is exclusive to training, greatness, and the whole thing. He's got his camp. He's got a church right over here. He's got his boxing ring. He's got everything here. It's excluded greatness. We're only the great train. They ain't messing around with no other stuff. It's only greatness walks in here. Would you consider it that?
If you train over 30-some world champions, what category would that put you?
Right. That's why you come in the Indiana Boxing Hall of Fame. And I got my buddies.
I want to ask you something.
Either way.
In Indiana.
Yeah.
If I would fight more fights in the history of Indiana than anybody, would that make you great?
I would consider it. I don't care who you are.
What certain things are hard
to do? Yeah,
and it's hard. It's hard to top. No one knows. Look, man, when you're going into these little towns and fighting, but you were a crowd pleaser, and not a crowd teaser in your own backyard, Greensburg,
Indiana. I was 9-0 with 2 knockouts. I went 12 rounds, I could believe 3 times. And that's not easy to do. I used to go on these 9-mile runs on Saturday that my coach Ed Dyer used to teach us. And I'd go on these 9-mile runs so I'd get all my wins up.
Yeah,
I got my buddies there. Yeah, my buddies go, I want to work. I want to train. I want to. I think, look, dude, we go out on a 2-mile run.
They're
tapping out. We ain't talking about champion no more. It's back to beer drinking. I mean, I'm not trying to be mean, but that's the truth.
Yeah. We just look at these hills here and everything else.
Yeah, I look at all these hills and all these
hills.
You do this, you do that.
Yeah,
chopping
down trees and everything else.
Who was the greatest fighter to ever live in the world? And we're staying here all weekend long, and we're going to the Philadelphia. I mean, we're close to Philadelphia. We're going right to the Pennsylvania Hall of Fame. He's one of the greatest fighters to ever live, Bernard Hopkins. I mean, come on, man. Bernard Hopkins, what do you think his training camp was? It was supposed to be sleeping like in some oxygen bed or something. He lasted 49 years old and still world champion, the oldest world champion to ever live. Now, he got beat at age 49, but he was 49 years old when he was middleweight world champion. And that's not easy to do. That dedication that he put in. He's a Hall of Famer in every level. He'd be some of the greatest fighters to ever live. E-Hop.
Yeah. What time is it?
It's macho time.
I got a story for you. All right,
come on. I'm fighting Camacho, and this is in 2003 in a rematch in Fort Lauderdale. It's macho time at the creek, and they got all the macho fans there, and everything's out there. So we go into the tent, and that's what I'm telling to Aaron. They put up in the boxing tent, and they put up this the tent in between us so we can't. The curtains, what they did, right in the tent, and they put the curtain up. We can't hear each other.
Right.
We can't really see each other. And we can hear each other. So, next thing you know, I hear him over there hitting the mitts, going pow 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 pow, and then I go over there and hit the mitts a few times, bang 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 bang, you know, a little small one, bang 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 bang, and I'm thinking that stuff's really gonna hurt. And then the whole time we're there for an hour before the fight, because we're the main event.
Uh-huh.
All they keep saying is, what time is it? Macho time. What time is it? Macho time. And it just went on for an hour.
Yeah.
So we're on the way to the ring, and I got Fred Burns with me in my corner, and he hasn't even been there much at all, but he's been there probably 15 minutes, enough to hear everything. And I tell Fred, I said, bring him on the way to the ring. I said, hey, Fred, what time is it? He says,
8:37. 8:37. Look, let's just talk about the guy. Let's talk about the myth.
Well, I got to talk about him. He got the Muhammad Ali shirt from back in the day. How you doing, man?
Good.
Just talk about, you know, the day and your experience. You know, we're live on the World Boxing Review Radio Show.
I was fortunate enough to come up here. 78, I was up here. I had just bought a camera secondhand, just getting interested in it. I came up here. I thought this would be a good place to photograph. And boy, was it. Ali was he was so nice. I remember he invited me and my girlfriend, who's now my wife, into his cabin.
Mm-hmm.
He's looking at my photos, and he took his time. He didn't have to do that. I was just a kid at the time. I wasn't with any media outlets. But he gave me the confidence, I must say, I went on to study photojournalism. Gave me that confidence, and I always thank him for that.
What's your full name again?
Jeff Julian.
Yeah, that's right.
So then I was lucky enough to reconnect with him in his later life, probably the last decade, you know, him and Ronnie. And I photographed him in a lot of different events. I photographed boxing for Yeah, this is great up here. What Mike Madden's done is just amazing.
It is amazing. The
right person got this place.
It got it.
Yeah.
And you know, that has to deal with the type of person, Muhammad Ali, and, you know, with Gene Kilroy and people like that, man. You know, he set this place the way it's supposed to be. I think so. What do you think about that?
Gene?
No.
Mike.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know, we want to try to get that feel of what it was like when Ali trained here.
It would be electrifying, right? We in closing, Bob, we got 1 minute. And thanks, Jeff, for coming on with the fine words. Look, Bob, thank you again for that. It was a short ride. We lifted up and came back down, but we touched down. Thank you, Craig.
Absolutely,
for coming on here. You're doing it, and thanks for announcing my induction into your Hall of Fame. Bless you, man.
We're glad to have you.
And we're going to try to get it packed in there next year. We're bringing in the big boys.
May 19th and May 20th.
May 19th and May 20th. Okay.
Well, God bless you. And we'd like to thank all of y'all for tuning in to the World Boxing Review Radio Show live. From Deer Lake, the fighters, heaven.
Yeah.
You know, I like to say haven, but Mike. But you know, that's only right down the road. But Mike said, "Say haven, heaven."
Yeah,
like yeah. Mike said, "Yeah." Mike straightened me out, got me on the right track. But thank you, Mike. Thank you, Mick, and thank you, Craig, everybody, and Jeff. Yeah. Thank you.
And my niece, thank you so much. She's up here doing the photography job and film job. Thank you. Thank you for tuning in to World Boxing Review Radio Show. Thank you. See you next week.
Great stuff.